Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnocky. I'm sitting at a table, and at that table are two other people, and they are Jess Perkins. Hello, Jess.
Hello, Dave.
And Matt Stewart. Hello, Matt.
Hi there, Dave.
We've just been waxing lyrical about how your voice is quite low, Matt.
Lowest in the room. All right. Welcome to the show. Okay.
Go as deep as you can. With your voice.
Okay, yeah, okay. I mean, I don't know if this is deeper or just more crackly. Is this deeper? Hey there, how's it going?
Yeah, that's
pretty
really deep.
That's deep. I need to harness the power I've got. I have no idea. It's like it's an unbridled.
Yeah.
Unbridled? Oh, fucking hell.
Well, you need to work out how you can monetize that
voice. It's unmonetized.
There we go.
Yeah. Oh, man. Untapped potential.
Ooh, I like the way you phrased that.
Ooh, baby.
Mama.
You can do quite low, Jess.
No, I can't. I'm a lady.
J-Lo.
How J-Lo can you go?
Not that low. Not that low.
I like what
I'm
I
a
hear.
Delicate, feminine lady.
Yes.
I talk nice and high all the time.
Oh, that's fine. I don't know.
All right, let's move on from deep voices, please.
Well, my voice isn't that deep, so I will move on and explain that this is the show where we research a topic and one of us researches a topic and reports back to the other two, taking in turns. Jess Perkins, you are the one. We were going to be listening to your feminine voice over the next sort of hour or so about a certain topic that Matt and I have no idea what you're going to talk about.
Yeah, and just a little disclaimer at the top. That this is probably one of my least prepared topics.
You say that every time.
No, I know, but this time I literally finished it on the tram on the way here.
That's so great. It's fresh.
Every time you think this is as low as it can go,
and then I do it even lower.
Oh.
It's just been a very long week. I haven't had time. Anyway, it's, you know what? I only have myself to blame, but I just don't want to get any tweets like, actually, like, just fuck off.
Yeah, we have a lot of 16-year-old girl fans tweeting us
who are really into facts.
I like those. I like it when people correct Jess.
I don't. It hurts me. I'm doing my best. All right, so we always start with a question, right?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Now, my question for you boys, is who is the most famous bad boy in Australian history?
I mean, DWR... I guess you're not quite famous.
No, but I'm ranking up there with the bad boys.
You are definitely a bad boy.
Yeah, you're a bit of a bad boy.
Am I the baddest boy in this room? Right.
Wait, was it in Australian history?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the modern day ones, you'd have like...
Who's a bad boy?
Karl Stefanovic.
Okay.
Is he a bad boy?
No.
Like a TV reporter?
Squeaky clean.
Squeaky, okay. So I'm on the wrong track.
See,
the one I want to guess, I have a funny feeling it might be right.
John Howard.
No.
But I don't want to. If I'm my guess, and I reckon this is probably right. Ned Kelly.
Correct.
That is really good. But now I want to think about. You've thought of a bad boy. I can't think of any other. Are there any other bad boys in our history?
Well, I thought it was a bit of an easy question because, like,
Carl Sandilands.
There's other, like, you know, criminals, outlaws, whatever they may have been. Yeah. But this is an Australian one, and really,
and he was quite young. Does a bad boy have to be young?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, old bad boy.
Ooh.
Oh, that's my favorite kind of bad boy.
An old bad boy.
Geriatric bad boy.
Looking at him.
Ooh.
Oh, what a market.
Look at him waddle away. That bad boy swagger.
Ooh. Oh, mine's old enough to be wheeled away. Ooh, dead bad boy. All right, too far with the bad boys. So Ned Kelly, that's very exciting. He's a very famous person in Australian history for anyone who may be from elsewhere.
We do have overseas listeners.
Yeah, we totally do.
So
I wonder if Ned, do you reckon Ned Kelly has penetrated history for other countries?
I wonder.
A little bit. I know Mick Jagger played him in a film.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah. Did Heath Ledger.
Exactly.
Academy Award winner.
Yeah, and the Heath Ledger one was quite a popular film, but I don't know how much exposure it got.
Yeah, overseas. Probably. I don't think it got a lot overseas.
But it was quite big here.
Yeah.
I
saw it at the cinema.
Yeah, I've seen it a couple of times. Great film.
Powderfinger in it.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Well, Bernard Fanning is.
Right.
I don't know if the whole...
I think three of them... I thought the whole band was...
Because they play like a...
What do they do?
Well, they're just like a band in one of the pubs.
And they wrote like some bush ballads or something
and Bernard Fanning singing. And then Bernard Fanning also did a song that plays right at the end called Shelter for My Soul, which is really beautiful. Just a little fun fact there. I don't have fun facts at the end, so...
I don't.
Hey, Jess, here's a fun fact. This is our second report.
Mm-hmm.
On an Irish-born bearded Australian from the 1800s.
Well, are we talking about...
Mr. Burke.
Mr. Burke, yeah. Mm. Fun fact.
Fun fact.
We've lowered the standards.
Do-go-on specific fun fact. Yeah. All right, so shall I tell you a little bit about our mate Ned?
Please do go on.
How much do you know? You probably know quite a bit.
Probably just the standard school-taught stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know a lot. I know his last words,
mm-hmm.
or at least what they say his last words.
Alleged last words. Yep, I'll talk about those.
Oh yeah.
I know he's got a wax head in the old Melbourne gaol.
Yep. Have you seen his armour?
Jail, I think.
Have you seen his armour at the state library?
Yeah, I reckon I probably did.
I didn't know him personally, but we've got some history. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Do you?
But we'll come to that when the show kicks on.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Well, that's a bit of sizzle. That's exciting. So let's start with his family, basically. So his father, John Kelly, was known by went by Red. He was an Irish gamekeeper, and he was found guilty of stealing two pigs in 1841 when he was 22 years old, and he was transported for 7 years to Van Diemen's Land, which was obviously later named Tasmania. Spoiler alert.
So he's a gamekeeper that tried to steal pigs.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
What kind of games he was keeping? Monopoly?
He's the master of Monopoly. Excuse me, sir. You should be playing Monopoly, not with the pigs on the boat you go.
Cheeky. Anyway, so he gets sent off to Tassie, and when he was given his ticket of leave, he crossed to Port Phillip District, which is now Victoria. Did you know we were called Port Phillip District?
Yeah, because it was that when it was in New South Wales. I said yeah, but no is what I meant to say.
Sure.
Two options to that question.
More accurately, no, not at all.
Anyway, so he comes across to Victoria and he settled at Beveridge, which is around 25 miles or 40 k's north of Melbourne. And it was there that he met Ellen Quinn, who was the elder sort of James Quinn, who John was working for at the time. Now, John Quinn had arrived in Australia as a bounty migrant with his wife and six children. And the bounty migrants are the ones who were paid to come here. Generally, they were like young, skilled workers or newly married young couples. The idea sort of being that they could help literally build the colony in terms of like they were skilled, they were tradespeople, so they would build it, but also like families, so they would sort of build a community, right? So
it's kind of like those miners in Western Australia now, but you don't get to go home after 3 weeks.
Yeah.
It's like a fly in, fly out job without the flying.
Yeah. Ship in, or going don't home. Ship out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're pretty much stuck here. And it was quite rare that larger families would have been given the bounty, so it was kind of it was kind of rare that they came across because they had six kids. The point is that they were a nice law-abiding family.
Ooh.
Okay, so they had no
Was John cool with Red dating his daughter, the boss's daughter?
No, he was not.
Oh,
he was not okay, but not because of like not because John had been working for him, but mostly because of his criminal background.
Criminal history.
Yeah, not good. So they her parents objected to her relationship with John or Red.
With a pig thief.
With a pig thief.
Stealing two pigs.
Oh. You know.
Yeah.
I mean...
Steal one pig. Shame on you. Steal pigs twice. Mm-hmm. John's not happy.
As they
James.
Say.
John is the pig stealer.
Yep. He's John's not happy with being deported, there is what I was trying to say.
There we go. Nailed it. Anyway, I should also note that John Kelly was 30 and Ellen was 18. Bit of an age difference there, too.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. Love's love, you guys.
Love's love, but also, like, back in that day, you're sort of closer to death at 30, aren't you?
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, they eloped. Now, I found two different variations of the story. One said they eloped to Melbourne. One said Ballarat. So they went either of those places,
and
they eloped, and they were married on November 18, 1850. And when they returned to Beveridge, they were forgiven by her family, a little begrudgingly, but he was sort of welcomed into the family, so that was all fine.
Here, Dad, I cooked you a roast pig.
Not again!
Oh, Red!
Show me the receipt.
Here it is, got it at Coles.
Sounds like trouble with pigs ran in the family, because, you know, Ned had...
Oh, police officers' pigs. Very good.
It took me far too long to get it. I am tired. Very good, Matt. Keep those zingers coming.
Okay.
Keep those historical zingers.
Yeah, take that, you pigs.
Sorry, police. I love the police.
Do you?
I love the police. I've got some cop friends. They're good people.
I love the police. Sting, great work. Great work. Honestly, that's
well, that would have been a lot funnier.
That would have been.
Or at all funny.
That's why Dave is the funny one. Anyway.
Funny boy.
Am I? Funny bad boy.
I'm the bad boy. You're the funny boy.
Ooh, I'm just the skinny boy.
Jess is the silly boy.
Oh. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
You are a silly boy. Also the tired boy.
Yeah, very tired. I'm so sorry. Okay. I'm mostly sorry to myself because I'll have to listen back to this. Now, Ned was the third child, and he was the eldest boy, and he was born in Wollan Wollan in June. Well, actually, again, I've seen December 1854 or June 1855. It's disputed when he was born. So somewhere in that 6 months he was born. Okay?
I accept.
Sometime 1854 to 55.
Either way, he's 150 years old, if he's still alive, which I'm not sure. I don't know.
Hey, no spoilers.
I don't know how the story ends. We'll he might see. Be still alive.
160, I think, maths boy.
Well, that would be true.
Oh, we got him! It took like 25 episodes or whatever fucking episode we're up to, 27, but we fucking got him.
Well, to be fair, I was just saying you're over 150 years old. Fuck you, maths boy! Which 160 is older than 150.
Fuck you. I want people to know that Matt and I are dancing aggressively.
It's quite aggressive. Yeah. Haven't
that's
seen
an in your fans.
In your fans.
In your face dance.
You haven't seen anything like that since Beat It.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrified.
Fuck you, Dave.
It's nothing better to me in terms of dancing than bad boy musical choreographed dancing.
It is great.
It's
so
like gang dancing.
The game, but they're all classically trained ballet dancers. Yeah.
There's I think Billy Joel's film clip for
Uptown Girl,
where they're like mechanics or something.
Mechanics.
And they do that low down
walking click. I probably have.
Yeah.
He's obsessed. He's got a playlist all about bad boy dancers.
The other great one is Toto's Rosanna. That's got some great bad boy dancing.
I don't think I've seen the
they
film.
They utilize this sort of fence, and it's really aggressive, but also very
sexy,
delicate, and.
Moving,
yep.
Above all else.
Above all else, moving.
It's what you want in a Toto film clip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, can I go on?
Please.
Okay, I'll allow it.
So around the time that Ned was born, 1854-55-ish, they were quite desperate times, so a lot of people in the community had just been brought over as convicts, so once they were admitted, they were kind of roamed the countryside committing more crimes. They didn't really think this system through. Like, if we bring over all these convicts and then just let them loose once they've done their time, everything will be fine, right?
Yeah, they just become free-range criminals.
Yeah, because once a criminal, that's it. You just do it once. You never return to that.
As they say, once a criminal.
Yeah.
Right? So they didn't think that through. So that was a little bit dumb. Now, the decline of the Kelly family's respect for the law began in November of 1856 when Ned's uncle, Jimmy Quinn, was arrested on a charge of cattle stealing. And the case was dismissed, but it sort of left the family with a lot of resentment towards the law. So that kind of continued for all
and
of
what,
Ned's
Ned's
life.
Like between 6 and 18 months old, depending
exactly.
on how
and it, Jimmy Quinn, he's a non... blood relation then.
He would be, no, because Ellen uncle. Quinn. He says his uncle.
His mother was Ellen Quinn.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So, he's a blood relation to Ned, but not to Red.
Not to Red.
So from the ones who came out on the bounty pass. So he's not even a
exactly.
He wasn't a criminal originally.
Yeah, he didn't come from that crime background. But it wouldn't just have been Red's influence, for example, because like we're saying, like, a lot of people in the community are convicts. There would have been more convicts than bounty migrants. So most of them have a criminal background.
Right.
So yeah, there would be an influence from that a lot as well.
Hide your pigs!
Now, they behaved themselves for another 3 years, but in the early 1860s, another one of the Quinn brothers, Jack, was charged with stealing a horse. Now, the case was dropped, as was another case against him a month later for cattle stealing.
There's a lot of farm stealing going on.
Well, what else have they got to steal?
It's the big currency back then.
Yeah.
I'll trade you my horse for your firstborn son.
Nailed it.
Okay.
What has he got to trade?
Because is this around Gold Rush or just pre-Gold Rush?
I think pre.
No, this is Gold Rush.
Around time, yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, sort of 1860s.
We did talk about it in the Birkenwells one, so we all remember that well.
I think it was just pre because there's more mention of that later. Anyway. So the police had now been thwarted three times, and they were pretty determined to...
Oh, so they didn't get him even the third time.
They didn't get him. They accused him of things, but the cases were always dropped. So they've missed him three times, and now they're getting pretty determined to get a Quinn. They don't even really care who it is. They're like, we just got to get somebody from this family. So they got one when Jimmy was arrested for illegally using a neighbour's horse.
Got him! Yeah, is that your horse, mate? I didn't think so. You're going away for a long time, son.
Well, I mean, how do you illegally use a horse?
Exactly.
I fell on him!
Well, that's not within the law, mate.
I was up a tree, suddenly I was riding on his saddle.
Is that a euphemism for bestiality?
It sounds like it, doesn't
it? Really
I fell
does.
On him.
Fell on him, mate.
He fell on me.
He not only illegally...
He fell in me.
He not only illegally
used a horse.
Is this a fell
on me? Pardon me. Sorry, please go on, Jess.
So not worth it.
I'll stand by my call.
Do you want to repeat it so I'm not talking over you?
Fell on me. Fell on me. Just as good the second time.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't, though.
It wasn't.
Anyway.
But is that a big crime back then?
Well, that was that, and he'd also been involved in a pub brawl. So for those two, he was sent to jail for 6 weeks. And it was.
I feel like you probably could have mentioned the fight first.
I thought illegally using a horse was much funnier.
It's way funnier, but just in the eyes of the law, you borrowed your neighbour's horse.
And that brawl, mostly the brawl though,
but the horse is a factor.
It was going to be 4 weeks, now it's 6, okay?
Feels like they'd chuck you in jail for anything back then.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, stealing two pigs you sent around the world
to
a weird jail country.
Yeah.
And then, that illegally using a horse.
Yeah.
That feels like a
maybe that's
don't
just,
do it again kind of scenario.
Maybe that's just a weird way of saying you stole it.
Even if you did steal it, I'm not sending anyone to jail for stealing a horse.
Yeah, but I suppose this is Jess's way of painting the picture of why Ned might hate the police growing
Thank
up.
Thank you, Dave, for getting the fucking point.
Wait, I'm not arguing with what Jess is saying. I'm wondering why...
Jess is saying it.
I wasn't at all. I was wondering why they... Back then, it just feels like the police were,
they were a little bit power. A little bit uptight.
I think you're absolutely right.
A bit power something.
And I think there's some more examples of that.
What's the thing I'm trying to say?
Power hungry?
Power hungry? Power. Powered gone to their head. There's a phrase for that. Tweet in. All right.
Great. May I go on? Thanks. So he was sent to jail for 6 weeks, and it was the first conviction against a Quinn, and the Quinns and the Kellys were hated and targeted by the police after that. So during the next 25 years, the Quinns, the Kellys, and the Lloyds, because Ellen's sisters married Jack and Tom Lloyd, so that whole sort of family, they had 57 charges against them. 34 of which resulted in convictions. No good.
Well, that's a little over half. It's not that many, is it?
All right, 34 convictions. Not bad.
No. What I'm saying is they
got away
got
with
off a lot, yeah. Or the police weren't making it up a lot.
Yeah. And it would be a bit of both, though, to be honest, because like we'd be dumb to be like, nah, they were all good boys. Like, they were stealing shit. They were into crime from young ages.
Borrowing the neighbour's horse.
Yeah.
But they might have just been profiling him, right?
Oh, they were a lot.
Because it was a super common thing for the Irish kids to get picked on.
Yeah, because Catholics were looked down upon. Catholics weren't allowed to even I don't remember how they worded it, but like be in a position of power or any sort of government until like the 1900s.
It's so funny
Irish
how
Irish Catholics
like,
were no good.
No matter what. Will always find a group to persecute.
Yeah.
And it just sort of keeps changing. And then, like, everyone goes through it for a little while. And then the community moves on to someone new. Pauline Hanson, she's a new group every 10 years, I think. It's Muslims at the moment, but...
Who'll be next?
But 10, 15 years ago, it was Asians. And then before that, Minimum Chips. She was working in a...
She was working in a fish and chip shop.
I was trying to work on the fly there and I didn't have anything.
I
you guys
loved
were looking
it.
At me like maybe I had something.
And you let us
but
down.
But she wasn't in politics before then. I don't know. What was before that?
No, she was against minimum chips.
Fuck.
That's great.
Well, I'm giving you some early editing work to do.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks for that.
No worries.
In 1866, John or Red Kelly died. Now,
no, not Red.
Ned was 11. And Ellen was left to raise 7 children.
Oh, dear.
So she had Irish Catholics, big families. Now, again, there's speculation. She later, I read that she later remarried and had another 5 children. But I think there was actually more. I've seen different numbers in different places. So it is a little bit confusing. I think in total he was one of about 12 kids.
It's pretty big, I guess.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So that's about right,
yeah. Are you not impressed by 12?
My dad was one of 13.
My mum's one of 9, and my dad's one of 8.
Yeah,
it's we're like Irish Catholics.
So I figured in the olden days, Catholics, Irish Catholics.
That's just too many kids. I'm going to put that out there. Just too many.
Well, I could not agree more. It's way too many.
No.
They've created a whole community, but they have also hastened global warming by quite a lot.
Good one, Mum.
So you're saying in 10 years we'll be back blaming the Irish Catholics for global warming?
But it's also great.
They're worse than coal.
Big families are great. It's so much fun. You know, it's the
great.
Cousins.
Oh, yeah.
I've got like 40-something cousins.
Yeah.
There's always somebody to hang out with. It's so good.
It's the best.
Now I feel sorry for if I have kids, which I don't even think I want to, but if I have kids, they're going to have like one uncle. I have one brother. That's it. They might have a cousin.
Yeah, but that'll be a special uncle. Oh, that'll be like, you know, like that. That'll be a close relationship.
Yeah, that's
true.
That's
different.
Yeah, aw.
Whereas the
thank you.
You know, your uncles and that are spread it like...
They're spread out. They're all over the...
My aunties and uncles, when I was a kid, you know, I'd be called my brother's name all the time. But if you have a kid, your uncle's going to know its name.
Yeah, good point. Well, you'd hope so, I also know my brother and he probably would not. So.
He'll know it, not just because you've named it after Pauline Hanson. Pauline! Pauline! Get in here!
You're going to name it after Pauline
Hanson?
Yeah,
I love Pauline Hanson.
What a name, Pauline.
Pauline.
But the middle name will be Hanson.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Bloody hell. Pauline Hanson Perkins. Got a kind of ring to it. Pauline Perkins. That's
Pauline
awesome.
Perkins. It's a bit much.
Double P.
Just enough, if you ask me.
Now, Ned's first documented brush with the law was on the 15th of October, 1869, at the age of 14, when he was charged with the assault and robbery of, this is the best name in the world, Ah Fook.
Ah Fook.
Ah Fook.
How do you spell Fook?
F-O-O-K.
That is a cool name.
Ah, Fook. He was a pig and fowl trader. He was a pig. He was a pig and fowl trader from a Chinese camp near Bright. Now, according to Fook, he was passing Kelly's house. Kelly approached him with a long bamboo stick, announcing that he was a bushranger and would kill him if he did not hand over his money. Then Ned allegedly took him into the bush, beat him with the stick, and stole 10 shillings. According to Ned and his sister Annie and 2 other witnesses, Annie was sitting outside the house sewing when Fook walked up and asked for a drink of water. And when he was given creek water, he abused Annie for not giving him rain water. And then Ned came outside and pushed him, like, back off from my sister. And then Fook then hit Kelly 3 times with a bamboo stick, causing him to run away. So there's all these historians find neither account all that convincing and believe that Ned's account is likely to be true up until the point where he was being hit by Fook, but then Ned probably took the stick and beat him with it anyway. So, like, there's just these 2 stories. But, like, who do you reckon, knowing the history here, who do we reckon the police are going to side with?
Well, probably Ah Fook, just because of the name.
Ah Fook.
They started with Fook?
Yeah.
So the Chinese were seen as being more respectable than the bloody dirty Irish Catholics.
Yeah, well, I suppose just anybody who had anything against the Kellys, they would have been like, yeah, fine, absolutely.
Yeah, great. I mean, I don't know anything about Fook, but he was a respected sort of guy?
I'm not really sure.
Is that why he was kind of coming in and bullying up on him?
I'm pretty sure with these, with this particular case, it got dropped again because they couldn't get an interpreter.
Oh, my God.
They couldn't.
Well, maybe that was why
there wasn't enough evidence.
Maybe there was a misunderstanding
about the water.
So probably. Fook didn't speak English?
Not very well.
Right. So that's probably where the first
miscommunication came out. Who knows what actually happened?
Simple misunderstanding.
That's what Ned got in trouble for.
See, the thing that I find most troubling is that Fook can't speak English, yet he's told people that he said, "Hello, I'm a bushranger. Give me all your money."
Good point. Ooh,
bushranger's a pretty... pretty specific word for a non-English speaker to pick up.
Yeah, it feels like the cops are filling in some blanks for him somehow.
Yeah.
So there were police sergeants that sort of had their eye on the family. There was Sergeant Welland in particular who really disliked Ned, but especially like the whole Kelly family. And after an earlier case with somebody completely different, didn't even have anything to do with Ned, he said he kept a watchful eye on the Kelly family, and according to fellow officers, became a perfect encyclopedia of knowledge about them through his diligence. Like, he would just keep his watch on the family. How
Sergeant
creepy.
Welland.
He doesn't really come up that much later, but anyway.
What an
I just thought that was really interesting.
That is, so
that
they're
targeted.
An encyclopedia on them.
I know everything about them.
Yeah, what do you want to know?
I know Ned's favourite colour, green. Next question.
Next question, please.
What is Ned's... What does he do Friday mornings?
Friday mornings. He gets up at 7 a.m, tends to the horses, goes and steals some more, probably.
Yeah, looks at the colour green because he loves it.
Classic Ned.
Classic Ned. Favourite meal? Peas. They're green. Next one.
Favourite hobby? Stealing.
Stealing.
Just being a general bad bloke.
Rubbish human. Into the bin. All right.
The green bin, please.
That's where the green waste goes.
Yeah.
Ned's favourite.
They had that back then.
Ned's favourite.
He's a big composter, Ned.
Gotta love his beard, though. Look at that beard. I'm jealous.
Just after Ned's 15th birthday, he survived another court case for a lack of evidence. There was always a lack of evidence, which is quite convenient. This time he'd been charged with robbery under arms as an accomplice of the notorious but polite bushranger, Harry Power. I like that he was written down as notorious. He was notorious, like everybody knew Harry Power, but he was nice. He was all right.
The gentleman ranger.
The gentleman bushranger, Harry Power.
But the D.B. Cooper of the 1870s.
Yeah.
It sounds like, from what you're saying, that even though the police sound a bit dodgy, that at least the judges are still saying, they're still going, there's not enough evidence.
That makes it sound much more reliable, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
If they were super dodgy, they'd be like, yeah, we don't believe you.
Yeah, whatever.
Because it's not just up to the local cops. Like, the local cops had it in for the Kellys big time, but then you take it to court, and more often than not, they had to come down to Melbourne.
Yeah.
And, people didn't have the same sort of bias against them.
Yeah, it's great.
And there was very rarely enough
makes evidence. I mean, it's still super annoying to have to go to court all the time, but at least they're not getting done potentially for things they didn't do.
Mm. One of the cases to do with Harry Power, this polite bushranger, they argued that Ned didn't match the description because witnesses described his accomplice as half-caste. But then the police were kind of like, yeah, but he's just unwashed. So he matches the description still.
So for overseas people, half-caste is an offensive term for a half-Aboriginal person.
Yeah. And so then they just say, well, he's unwashed. It's like, oh not good.
Oh
no
goodness.
Good. That's not coming from me, guys. I'm quoting history here.
Oh, history's fucked.
Don't shoot the messenger.
History really is fucked.
History's fucked.
History
ours is not good.
Really
and we're
gross.
A young country, so it's not that long ago.
No.
Not
great-great-grandparent sort of stuff.
Yeah. Ugh.
Their blood runs through us.
No good.
Not through me, but you guys.
Why not you?
I don't think my family got here quite then.
Oh yeah, no, we came later.
Look, I'm trying to distance myself from it.
And where did you come from?
Scotland, Ireland, Italy, Switzerland.
Jeez, you got
England.
A whole mix. Italy wouldn't pick you to have any Italian in you.
Yeah, my nana was a Mascherini. Up and she grew up in near Bright, where you were just mentioned before.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Where are you from? Warnicky, German.
Grandfather's German, came out in about 1900. Before the Nazis, thank you very much.
We were all thinking it.
And my mum's dad, so my granddad, was born in Scotland and came out when he was about 7 in the 1930s.
Oh, wow. Okay. Both my sides of the family are Irish and came out, they bloody chose to, okay?
I'm majority Irish, admittedly, but I've got little bits and pieces of other stuff.
It's a bit cool. So back to this polite bushranger.
Yes, what's his name?
Harry Power.
Love it.
Harry Power.
Power's one of the best surnames.
So good, right?
Yeah.
So a couple of years after that incident for Ned, Power was captured in 1870 while he was asleep one night and was sentenced to 15 years jail for various crimes, and he was convinced that Ned had informed the police. He was the dibber dobber, but the real informer was actually Ned's uncle, Jack Lloyd.
Low-dog Lloyd, they called him.
Lloyds. Yep,
those Lloyds, they're the least trustworthy of the three for me.
I could not agree more.
The three families.
Could not agree more.
The Kellys, the Quinns, the Lloyds.
Mm. So that same year, 17-year-old Ned he served 6 months for assault and indecent behaviour. And upon his release, he returned home. And there he met Isaiah Wright, who went by Wild, so Wild Wright.
Oh, that is good.
Great name.
Australia's best bad boy contender.
Yeah.
Wild Wright.
Yeah, I reckon.
Wild Wright.
Wild Wright.
It's pretty good. So he was staying with the Kellys, the horse that he had arrived on had gone missing, so he borrowed one of the Kellys' horses to return to Mansfield, and he asked Kelly to look for the horse and said he could keep it until Wild came back. So he's like, if you see my horse, just grab it for me and I'll be back, right? So it's a bit weird. But Ned found the mare and used it to go to Wangaratta, where he stayed for a couple of days. And then as he was heading home, he gets approached by Police Constable Hall, who, from the description of the animal, knew the horse was stolen property. Ugh. So when he attempted to arrest Ned, it turned into a fight, and the police officer drew his gun and tried to shoot him, but Kelly overpowered him and humiliated him by riding him like a horse.
Sorry, that's really awful.
And driving his spurs into the back of his legs.
Oh, bloody hell. That's not smart.
Right, so like...
But very funny.
Very funny.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to say that he shot him.
No. He just...
Or humiliated by pulling his pants down.
He rode him like a horse. And then Ned always maintained that he had no idea that the horse was had actually been stolen.
So
the other guy stole the horse.
Wild Wright had stolen it.
Right. Yeah. Right. So it belonged to Mansfield postmaster, and that Wright had stolen it. So after just 3 weeks of freedom, Ned, along with a couple of others, was sentenced to 3 years imprisonment with hard labour for feloniously receiving a horse.
Again, that sounds like bestiality.
Yeah.
Receiving a horse.
It totally does.
In your butt.
Feloniously.
Yeah, feloniously.
In his felonious tube.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh.
Whereabouts is that tube?
You know, Matt.
Stop. Is it? No, well, there you go.
No, there's no such thing as a felonious tube.
Did you seriously?
Are you thinking of fallopian?
That's where I was punning on. It was a vague pun.
Yeah. There's no such thing as a felonious tube.
Well, Dave, you keep calling this a fact-based podcast. So where is the felonious tube?
Non-existent.
Oh, I see.
I see how this pun game works.
No, I choose to believe that it's in your butt.
All right. So, Ned went to prison for that as well. Poor Ned. So then Ned was released from Pentridge Prison in February of 1874.
I didn't know we went to Pentridge.
It was a Pentridge.
Cool. That's like apartments now.
Yeah, I have a friend whose house looks out over what is remaining of Pentridge.
Yeah.
That was worth adding.
So what year did he get released?
1874. So to settle the score for the stolen horses, this is so good, and the 3 year sentence for it. On the 8th of August in 1874 at Beechworth, Ned, who was 19, fought and won a bare knuckled boxing match against Wright. So they had a fight.
Oh, against the other bushranger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, against the guy who'd actually stolen the horse.
Yeah.
So as to settle the score, they had a bare buckle, bare knuckled boxing match.
On the beach.
It lasted at Beachworth.
Oh, damn. That would have been hilarious.
It would have been so romantic.
You're on the beach.
There's a brewery in Beachworth that's label is the Ned Kelly mask. Oh, so that makes sense.
There you go.
And he won.
Celebrating
the
bare
knuckle
fight. It
lasted 20 rounds.
Holy crap.
Oh, like there was a ding ding and everything.
It was a big fight. And he was declared the unofficial boxing champion of the district. How good is that?
He must have been a great fighter if he's beaten people up when he's 15 and then 16.
Well, when he was a fully grown adult, he was just over 6 foot. But apparently at like 14 or 15, he was already 5'8". Like, he was quite tall. And around the time of that Ah Fook incident...
Ah, fuck.
Because Ah Fook had said, oh, it was like a 20-year-old man. And so that was sort of part of the argument, like, well, Ned's 14. But he was already such an imposing figure. He was like this big, broad...
It's funny to think. In my head, I just pictured that being two adults. But no, it's basically some kids quarrelling.
Yeah, yeah.
One kid and one young man.
Yeah, I know. So that was a bit strange.
Do you reckon the boxing would have been like this?
Oh, yeah, with a fist definitely curled back towards your face. Yeah. That old school style.
Thanks for doing a physical gag on a podcast.
I reckon that...
Is that a gag?
Can I take a photo of you doing it and then I'll tweet it?
Right, no doubt about that.
I think... Well, don't do it right now because our followers will have no idea what the tweet means.
No, I'm not going to tweet it now. I'm just taking the photo now.
I think you're going to put it out there right now. Hey, guys, on the latest
sizzle.
Ned Kelly episode, people...
Oh, what?
Where's the link? What the fuck?
No, I'll tweet that at the top.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, so then after that, after their fight, Wright became one of Ned's most ardent supporters.
They were good. He kicked the shit out of me, and what a guy!
Yeah, I love that.
I love that.
You know, you've won my favor today, sir.
Yeah. And so then they were buddies.
You beat respect into me.
Isn't that good?
Do you think they still make men like that? Because if someone kicked the shit out of me, I would not respect them.
They
I
still
would just
make
be
men
terrified.
Like
but
that.
You know, like in old days, it'd be like. Fighting against the enemy. No. I will not hear a bad word about those Turkish men. They are very brave. You know how they respect each other and that kind of... I'd be like, no, that guy bloody shot at me. Oh, my God.
He's the worst.
No.
Yeah, good point. But no, this is a different time, Dave.
Yeah, I think
different
my time.
This is pre-Facebook.
Mum's grandpa, who fought at Gallipoli, was not a bad bloke, Johnny Turk. That's what he'd say. Not a bad bloke referring to the people they were fighting against.
That's brilliant, though.
Yeah, had a lot of respect for each other.
I suppose we do not understand.
No, exactly. I will probably, hopefully, never find myself in that situation.
God, you would never make it.
Oh, my goodness.
They would never send you.
Oh, I don't know.
They could use him as a cannonball.
I was there. I'd picture Dave in wartime. Like
as a old nurse.
as a telegram boy or something.
Yeah, the ones they use the teenage boys for. Are you a fast runner?
Fast enough to... Run a telegram if it means not fighting on a beach. Yeah, I'll do whatever it
You'll
takes.
Be running through the shrapnel.
Yeah, it's no good.
Oh, you mean telegramming on the beach?
Yeah.
It's still not a good job.
No.
Where do you think you're running the telegrams from?
They'd run through the trenches.
Back at the headquarters.
Yeah, from the Prime Minister to the Prime Minister's assistant. 20 metres. Hey, John. Churchill's got another thing he wants. 2 coffees. Go get him, mate. All right, I'll tell him you'll be back in 5. That's my job.
You're wearing for England as well.
Yeah.
It's interesting. That's your instinct.
Yeah, of course. I'm not going to work for bloody Australia.
Who was the Australian? You'd know that one. Who was the Australian Prime Minister in World War II?
We're not talking about World War II.
No, good point.
I don't know.
We're talking about Ned Kelly.
That's true.
Oh, sorry. Let's keep talking about Ned Kelly. So
yeah, there's an idea.
Sorry, everybody.
Not even up to the good shit yet. Now, while Ned was in prison, his brothers, Jim, who was 12, and Dan, who was 10, were arrested by Constable Flood for riding a horse that did not belong to them. Now, the horse had been lent to them by a farmer they'd been doing some work for, but the boys spent a night in the cells before the matter was cleared. So even at 10 and 12, they were...
Crazy.
They were targeted by the police.
You're just setting them up to be... Like, when I did criminology at uni, one of the few things I remember is they'd talk about labelling theory.
Mm.
So if the idea is that if people are seen to be a certain kind of criminal or bad people, even if they're not, they just end up being... They end up just doing crimes.
Doing that anyway.
But this is... Yeah. Mm. If we're going to think we are anyway, then fucking...
What they're going to become anyway.
I'll show you crime.
Yeah, well... If you're persecuted from the age of 10, you're probably going to hate the cops.
Probably.
Hopefully I'm not misremembering that. I'm sure there's some criminologists out there going, shut the fuck up, you piece of shit.
You did one elective, you dickhead.
Actually majored in it, but still.
Oh, wow. And you still aren't sure.
It was a little while ago.
The real trouble for the Kellys started in 1878 when a probationary constable, Alexander Fitzpatrick, was dispatched from Benalla to take charge at the Greta police station for a week, right? And on his way, he stops at the pub and then decides to go and see the Kellys. So he's ignoring the standing orders that policemen must never go near the Kelly household alone. So he goes alone.
Has he had a few pints?
He's had a few pints. And he...
I'm gonna go sort out these Kelly boys.
He had said that he would... exactly that. He had said he would fix the Kellys.
Fix them.
He's going to fix them. And so he went to the homestead to arrest Dan Kelly on horse-stealing charges. Now, his account of the evening was that Ned and two of his neighbours were all armed, and they'd attacked him, and Dan had stolen his revolver. And he said Ned shot at him twice from close range and missed. Then Mrs. Kelly whacked him on the head with a shovel.
Wow, they're all getting into it.
They're all getting in. The whole family's involved.
Very slapsticky-sounding scene. Yeah.
And then Ned fired a third shot, which hit him in the wrist, but amazingly broke no bones.
Oh.
Right. But then Ned later hotly denied all of this. Firstly, he said he hadn't been anywhere near the family home. He actually admitted that he'd been off stealing horses elsewhere. And secondly, he said an unerring shot such as himself would not have missed Fitzpatrick from a few yards.
Come on, Fitzpatrick.
I love both of those.
That's a great piece of evidence.
Firstly, no, I was stealing horses. And secondly, I'm a very good shot.
Yeah, if I wanted him dead, he'd be fucking dead.
If I'm a few yards away, you'd be dead. So, and you know what's funny? Like, Fitzpatrick was later dismissed from the police as a liar and a larrikin, but the story about his encounters with the Kellys still stuck. Like, people still sort of, it stuck on them, but people knew that Fitzpatrick was full of shit. It's so weird. Now, after the incident with Fitzpatrick, Dan Kelly was advised to just go into hiding. So he took to the Wombat Ranges south of Greta, and later two of his friends, Steve Hart and Joe Byrne, joined him. And their other friend, Aaron Sherritt, acted as a courier between the township and their hideout.
That could have been my job.
Yeah, you could have been that. Well, I don't think you want to be Aaron Sherritt, and you'll find out why.
Oh,
so these are all names to remember.
I'll jot them down. So,
Steve Hart.
With the heart of a Steve.
Joe Byrne. And it's B-Y-R-N-E.
Oh.
You can probably remember Dan Kelly. And Aaron Sherritt.
And Aaron Sherritt is me.
You are Aaron Sherritt.
At least a couple of them are in the gang, I reckon.
Bang. Matt, there it is, baby.
Do you want to pick a character here? I've got Aaron Sherritt. Do you want to be Steve Hart or Joe Byrne?
I like Joe Byrne. I think he's in... Yeah, I'll be Joe Byrne.
Joe Byrne in the 2003 film, played by Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom,
oh,
yeah.
Bloody well.
Oh, my God.
So I feel like I could... Yeah, I could fill those shoes.
I feel like I'm Ned.
You are Ned.
For being honest.
Why isn't Dan Kelly up for grabs?
Oh, it is, but there's only three of us.
Well,
five of them.
You, dear listener... will be Dan Kelly.
Okay, great.
Good choice.
So
Dan's
we've all got
great.
Characters. Joe Byrne, Matt, me, Aaron Sherritt, mm-hmm. Dan
who,
Kelly, the
who
listener.
Who played Dan Kelly in the Bloom?
They Hedger. Actually, Dan and Steve were two Australian actors, I believe. Lovely. Fantastic. Don't know their names, but they were great.
All right, great.
Anyway, so they've gone into hiding up in the mountain. At the same time, Ellen Kelly, Ned's mother, was sentenced to 3 years jail for aiding the attempted murder of Constable
Fitzpatrick. Oh, for the shovel shot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 3 years.
3 years. And when Ned heard of the news of his mother's arrest, he swore revenge. And this is how the Kelly gang began.
Oh, my God.
So now Ned's 23, Dan's only 17, Steve is 18, and Joe's 21. They've taken to the mountains because the Kelly boys were both being sought after, and they had a £100 reward being offered for the capture of either of them. And at Benalla Police Headquarters, two armed mounted patrols of 4 men each were sent out to find them. Disguised as prospectors, they set out on October 25th in 1878.
Oh, I'm just looking for some gold. Bang! Yeah. You're dead.
And you know what I like? I always go to say 1978. I just assume that we're talking about...
I did the same thing in the Burke and Wills episode.
It's really
over
hard.
And over and over.
Really hard. Anyway, so one party was made up of Sergeant Michael Kennedy, Constables Thomas McIntyre, Thomas Lonergan, and Michael Scanlon. Not a lot of names back then. We've got two Michaels, two Thomases in the same group. There's lots of Jacks, there's lots of Jims. Do try to keep up.
All right. Michael, Thomas, Thomas.
Thomas,
and...
Thomas. So they head off from Mansfield, and they pitched camp that day at Stringybark Creek. Ring a bell?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
It was only 18 miles from Mansfield, so they travel about 18 miles, they set up camp. The next morning, Scanlon and Kennedy, the two Michaels, went off on their horses to just scout the area, see if they could find the Kelly boys. So they were looking for the gang. Now, the Kelly gang, who'd spotted the camp, struck while only two of them were there. Ned and Dan were armed with two shotguns, but Joe and Steve were unarmed. When Ned yelled out, "Bail up! Put your hands up!" McIntyre did so, but Lonergan leapt behind a log and drew his revolver. And as he raised his head to take aim, Ned fired, and Lonergan was killed immediately.
Oh, shot him in the head.
Shot him. The gang then waited for several hours for the return of Kennedy and Scanlon. And at dusk...
What about the fourth guy?
The fourth guy, they were sort of just holding hostage.
Okay, right,
yep. He was just there.
Cool, cool.
They were getting him to cooperate.
Not surprising. You've just seen your mates get his head blown off. You're probably going to do what they say.
You'd probably behave yourself. So they waited until dusk, which is when they returned to the camp. And McIntyre, who's the police officer who's left behind, he was sitting on a log and Ned's hiding just behind the log. And commanded by Ned, McIntyre called out, "You'd better dismount and surrender. We're surrounded." Now, thinking he was joking, Kennedy reached for his revolver. And at this point...
What a time!
It's so good.
You know, he's just having a muck around. We'll get the gun out.
Yeah, we're not out hunting people who are probably out to get us as well, so he's probably kidding. Now, Ned jumps up from behind the log and again yells at him to put his hands up. And Kennedy, this is pretty cool, he leaps from his saddle, uses his horse as a shield. I'm not saying that bit is cool.
How cool is that?
He's just using his horse as a shield. He runs for cover behind some trees. And Scanlon panics, reaches for his rifle, and Ned shot him in the chest. He was just killed immediately as well.
He's a good shot.
He's a very good shot.
Well, yeah, that's why he didn't shoot that other officer in the wrist.
Exactly. Now, McIntyre, so the police officer who had been left behind, he grabs the reins of Kennedy's horse, jumps on, and the horse just bolts into the bushes while they're shooting at him. So he gets away.
Well, that's pretty daring, isn't it? Jumping on a horse in a hail of bullets.
Well, is it daring or is it cowardly? Because he was kind of abused later for being a coward. Because he ran, but he was unarmed, so some people sort of defend that.
Because they had four people with shotguns around him. Oh, I'm probably
what did
get
they
him.
Want him to do?
Stay and fight. He was out there to get them. He was out there to get them, and then he just runs away.
Trying to punch the bullets away.
Hey, I'm not on that side. I'm
go 20
saying.
Rounds with the shotgun, all right.
So he's taken off. Now the gang pursues Sergeant Kennedy. Now he exchanged shots with the group, was eventually shot and hit below the armpit, and he fell critically wounded. And now Ned could see that the sergeant wouldn't survive the night, so he shot him in the heart, then returned to the camp, got Kennedy's overcoat and placed it over the body as a mark of respect for, this is a quote from Ned, "the bravest man I've ever met."
Oh, wow. Sweet praise.
Sweet praise.
Whoa.
Meanwhile, McIntyre had been thrown from his horse when it hit a log and fell. And when he came to, he decided to hide in case the gang came after him. So he took the bridle and the saddle off the horse, sent it on its way.
So it looks like a wild horse.
Yeah, exactly. And then he hid for a bit, and then he started to walk through the pitch dark bush back to Mansfield. And then he told his story of the attack, and a search party was sent out to recover the bodies of the murdered officers. But like I was saying before, he was, like, abused for for running, for fleeing the scene.
How dare you survive?
But others argued that because he was unarmed, he didn't really have a choice. So, you know, still, what a pussy.
I'm on his side.
It is funny that, yeah, that was how men were seen back then. They had to be, I mean, you can die and be, you know, okay. Like, that's base level is you're dead.
Yeah.
It's not like you're a hero.
But if you survive something, then you are an absolute coward.
Yeah.
You piece of shit.
It's very strange. It was a strange time. So the Kelly gang, they weren't done. They were declared outlaws after raids on the National Bank at Euroa and Faithful Creek Station in December of 1878.
So now they're proper bank robbers.
They're proper bank robbers. Months prior to arriving in Girildary, which is where they did another bank heist, Ned Kelly dictated to Joe Byrne a lengthy letter for publication giving his take on his activities. So the treatment of his family and more generally the treatment of Irish Catholic colonials by the police. So it's pretty interesting. Now, it's now known as the Girildary Letter. It's a handwritten document of 56 pages.
Whoa!
7,391 words.
It's like the world's first think piece.
Yeah, god damn, it's like a TED Talk.
8,000 words nearly, wow.
According to historian Alex McDermott, Kelly inserts himself into history on his own terms with his own voice, which I kind of like. I like that. And he says his language is hyperbolic, elusive, full of striking metaphors and images. At one point he describes the Victorian police as a parcel, this is so good, a parcel of big, ugly, fat-necked, wombat-headed, big-bellied, magpie-legged, narrow-hipped, splay-footed sons of Irish bailiffs or English landlords.
I'd love to see an artist's impression of that.
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot happening.
The magpie feet, yeah.
I'm pretty sure they quote that in the film as well. I recognise that. And the letter closes. This is pretty good. The letter closes, "Neglect this and abide by the consequences, which shall be worse than the rust in the wheat of Victoria or the druth of a dry season to the grasshoppers in New South Wales. I do not wish to give the order full force without giving timely warning, but I am a widow's son outlawed, and my orders must be obeyed." Ooh.
Laying it down.
That is bad boy language.
That
is bad boy.
Australia's first bad boy.
That's real sexy. Interestingly, in January of 1879, police under the command of Captain Standish, Superintendent Hare, and Officer Sadlier...
Hare, who was played by Geoffrey Rush in the film.
Oh, you're right. Very good. He was Hare, yep. They arrested all known Kelly friends and sympathisers, a total of 23 people, including Wild Wright, who we spoke about before, and held them without charge in Beechworth Jail for over 3 months.
Whoa!
No charge, just held them in jail. And what's really interesting is that public opinion was turning against the police on this matter because they were like, well, those people didn't do anything.
Yeah, that's a long time.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that because the public opinion was not so good, they did let them out a few months later, but none were given money or transported back to their hometown, so all had to just find their way back. Some of them up to like 50 miles on their own, just go home, whatever.
You're done.
They gave them a whack and just sent them into the bush.
Took off their saddles.
Took off their saddle and bridle. Gave them a whack.
Gave them a whack. Off you go.
Off they go.
That's a very good callback. Somebody was paying attention.
Thank you.
Not bad. Now, Dave, you might not like this bit.
Oh, no. Is it Aaron Cherrett?
Yeah. So,
little messenger boy.
On 25th of June 1880, Dan Kelly and Joe Byrne rode into the valley where Aaron Cherrett had a small farm. Now, there's a J.J. Keneally, he wrote that Cherrett was close to Byrne and they'd gone to school together. And this is what he said about him. He says, "Sherritt fed the police with constant supply of news of the outlaws' plans. He was a snitch!
Oh, no!
You're a snitch!
Sherritt, you dog!"
Sherritt felt himself in very much the same position as some newspaper men. He felt that he had to supply facts if available, but if facts were not available, then fiction.
He just made it up.
He made it up. Threw his mates under the bus for some nice, sweet coin.
And that's what he thought the newspaper men...
That's 100% what they were doing.
Right, fiction.
I did journalism, I can confirm. If you don't have facts,
really,
make it up.
They teach you that.
Oh, day one.
Really?
Yeah, they do that, and the and like your newsreader voice in the first term.
Do you know who played Sherritt in the film?
Yes.
Do you want to share?
Do you want to share it with us?
I know his name and I can't think of it, but don't. Joel Edgerton.
It is Joel. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Joel Edgerton. He's very good.
Oh, but he's an absolute lying.
Low dog.
So yeah, he's a police informant, and there are actually four police officers. They were stationed at his house, armed to the teeth for his protection. So there were cops at his house. Now, despite being aware of this, despite knowing there were police, the Kelly gang decided to assassinate him.
Oh.
Yeah, good call.
Yeah.
You had to take decisive action there and...
Yeah, it's no good.
Kill the motherfucker.
Okay. Now, while they were observing the home, they noticed Sherritt come to the door and talk to Anton Weeks, a German-Australian farmer who lived nearby. So Dan and Joe kidnapped Anton Weeks, reassuring him that he'd not be hurt if he just obeyed. So they pushed him to the Sherritt's back door, and Joe knocks on the door and stood back, and they could hear movement, and Sherritt's like, oh, who's there? And so Weeks replies, oh, it's me, I've lost my way. That's a good one.
I've lost my way, but you're at that house, you know where it is.
Yeah.
Now Sherritt's wife opens
thinking
the door.
He's thinking on his feet, so.
By the way, his wife's 15. Creepy.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, that's not good.
Oh, this Sherritt character wasn't already a piece of shit.
Yeah, he sounds like
a 15-year-old. And so he's sort of standing in the doorway as well with his wife, and he's having a bit of a joke with his German mate, like, mate, you must be bloody drunk.
Oh, you bloody found yourself out here, mate.
Having a good bloody laugh. Now, while he's just having a bit of a laugh, Joe shot him in the chest at point-blank range.
Oh, that's you, Matt.
That's you. And that's your friend. That's your friend.
Well, no friend of mine's going around with fact and or fiction.
Talking about me.
So he's having a good old laugh.
He gets shot in the chest.
At point blank range.
Yeah, but then he falls backwards. Joe follows him into the house, shoots him again.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Brutal.
Bang.
And do you know what's kind of interesting as well is that his mother-in-law, Ellen Barry, testified to the commission that at this point she knelt down by her son-in-law's head and Joe called her by her name because they were well acquainted. Ellen Barry had been a particular friend of Joe's mum as well.
Yeah.
And threatened to shoot her and her daughter if they didn't reveal who was in the bedroom. They could hear people in the bedrooms, so like, who's in there? They said it was just somebody staying with them. So she said, oh, it's just somebody staying with us. But then there's a note that she said, Joe, I've never heard Aaron say anything against you. And he replied, he would do me harm if he could.
Oh,
he did his best, which I kind of take to like he did his best to harm
us
by lying and feeding the information to the police. Mm. Who knows? Anyway, so that's no good.
But Aaron's dead.
Aaron, he dead. And then there were police in the house.
Is that who's hiding in the front bedroom?
Yeah, there were the four police officers. There were.
And they just heard the two gunshots and went. Oh, that'd be right.
Well, that's where it gets kind of interesting because they were like, oh, we're just getting out. We'll just get our weapons. It's very strange. The gang kept the police trapped in the house for 12 hours, threatening to burn the house down to roast them alive. But they left without doing so. They just left them there. And the four constables emerged from the house at 6 o'clock on Sunday evening. And Ellen Barry, Ann Sherritt's widow, later testified that the constables had an easy shot at Joe when he murdered Sherritt and they had their firearms ready. And they didn't shoot him. So even the police are like, And then Superintendent Hare later wrote, it was doubtless a most fortunate occurrence that Aaron was shot by the outlaws. It was impossible to have reclaimed him, and the government of the colony would not have assisted him in any way, and he would have gone back to his old course of life and probably become a bushranger himself.
So he pretty much said good riddance.
Yeah.
Because he probably would have been bad again.
Like, even the cops hated him.
Oh, wow.
Everyone hates you, Dave. That's what we're trying
Dave,
to say.
You're a real piece of work,
what
mate.
A piece of shit.
You're a piece of shit. So, I mean, they did a lot of things, but we'll sort of get to the main event, right? So after a few more bank robberies, they're just like, oh, let's just do a couple more. The Kelly gang had their last stand in the small town of...
Glen Rowan.
Very good. In 1880, their last stand was in Glen Rowan. They took 60 hostages in a hotel. And the gang established a base at the Glen Rowan Hotel, determined to fight it out with police when they came.
So it's 60 hostages.
Yeah, but apparently they were, like, playing card games. Ned told the band to play. They had drinks. Like, they were having a great time. They were day drinking.
Were they under... Did they know they were being held hostage? Like, was it a classic yes. D.B. Cooper where they're all like, yeah, we're having a great time, and then when you go to leave, they're like, no.
No, they knew they couldn't leave. They knew they were hostages, but they were apparently, like, even survivors said they were treated quite well.
And isn't that weird? The public was sort of on board with them, right?
In a way, yeah, because they didn't like... They were against the police as well.
Yeah, so they were cool.
And especially because they were treated quite well, so it was fine. It's still strange. Because the reason they'd sort of stopped there was two special trains had been dispatched from Melbourne carrying police reinforcements and reporters following the killing of Sherritt. So Ned's main mistake here was that there was a guy. Now, some reports say he was like a primary school teacher. Others say he was like a postmaster. Ned came across him but let him go home. And said, like, don't leave your house. And they're like, no, we won't do anything. We won't tell anybody what you're going to do. We'll stay in our house.
No.
But as the train started to arrive, it was about 3 a.m., Curno, his name was, grabbed his sister's red scarf and candles and matches and rushed to the railway line. He managed to, like, flag down the train. To let them know, because I kind of forgot to mention that the train was coming in, but their plan was to derail the trains. Did I say that? No.
No, I didn't.
The trains were coming in. They had messed with the railway tracks.
Oh, so he said, whoa, problem yeah, overhead.
Exactly. So he stopped the train and saved everybody on board.
Ned Kelly trusted this fuckhead.
Yeah.
That's the only reason they got done in.
Well,
probably would have been, you know, a couple of weeks later.
But also,
still. Oh, true, yeah, you're right.
Stopped a train being derailed would have killed a lot of people.
Yeah, but not a lot of people, a lot of pigs.
Oh,
dirty fucking
and reporters
ugh. Also scum,
swine,
cops and reporters. Mate, it would have done humanity a great service you if
know,
you let that.
You know
happen.
What else would have made me happy? If a different group of people were on that train.
Are we talking about tax accountants?
We're talking about tax accountants.
Oh, bloody
fuck them.
I bet they were on there too. I bet they were the ones who probably did the cowardly... was that coward before? He would have been a tax accountant.
Oh, he was 100% an accountant. Even though we know he was a cop, he was probably also an accountant on the side.
Yeah, I bet he did
moonlighting as an accountant.
Yeah, that piece of bloody work.
He was probably an accountant and then changed career paths later in life.
To become a dirty pig.
What a dickhead.
I've got to stop saying that. I've got a lot of respect for police.
Oh, I don't.
I have to go on record and say that I respect journalists, police officers, and...
Oh, yeah, I respect all those people, but not back then. That train load...
It's a different time, Dave.
That was a different time. They were scum back then. Irish-hating scum.
Anywho.
I mean, that's classic German Dave Nazi Warnocky, always backing the scum.
That came out before World War II. It's even before the First World War.
Anyway, so he's flagged down the train. He's told them, be careful. He told the guards that the torn tracks were up ahead and that the Kelly gang was laying in wait at the hotel. So, led by Superintendent Hare, Geoffrey Rush, the troopers attacked the gang in the hotel. So Superintendent and other police officers were wounded when the gang shot at the police. So they basically surrounded the hotel and they're shooting at them. And Ned and all the boys are inside. Now, the townsfolk were allowed to leave the hotel when there was a lull in fighting.
What, out the back door? Just go out the back.
Yes. They literally let them out.
It's a bit of a lull.
Oh, hang on. It seems like, yeah, okay,
everyone,
off you go.
Oh, this fight is going off.
We're just going to play it by ear if that's okay. Just when there's a lull, you can pop out.
It gets a bit boring.
It's called time out.
But Ned was shot in the arm and thumb. And he sort of retreated to the bush, so he got out of the actual hotel itself and kind of, it's almost like he went out and around a little bit because there was so much smoke and gunfire. He could sort of sneak out. So he's kind of gone out the side and almost around behind where the police are. So he's now behind them.
And he tapped him on the shoulder.
Yoo-hoo!
Boom.
Boom. And I'm gone. So that was his plan. His plan was to attack the police from behind, so they weren't expecting him there.
Oh, I'm still barracking for him. Even though I know they're bad people, I just... And I know that it doesn't end well. I'm still I'm still barracking.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. You kind of back them. And it's interesting because they knew that there was a thing called the Felons Apprehension Act, which meant they could be shot because there were warrants out against them. They were bad boys. They could be shot. So that's why they all donned the armor, the very famous suits of armor. Now, apparently, I've read two different things. One, that it was made quite recently to the event, but others that it was made like the year before.
So talk us through this armor if people haven't seen it.
If you haven't seen it, it's almost like it's sleeveless. It's an off the shoulder number. It's mostly just a chest plate, but then there is also like a hinge and then another bit just down the bottom, isn't there?
And it's big, heavy metal.
It's heavy metal. It weighed about 45 kilos.
Which is Dave Warnocky's.
Yeah, nearly my weight.
Yeah.
So and then what? And then
carrying you.
And then there's a mask that looks like a post box.
Yeah, basically. A little slit for your eyes. Slit for the eyes. Apparently, I think it was Joe's, or it might have been Steve's, was like slightly better, they reckon, just because of the coverage of the eyes. But, you know, ultimately.
So they're all wearing it.
They're all wearing it. All four of them had it on. Did you always just think it was just Ned?
Well, that's the one you see in the library of the museum, as you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, but they all had them. But Ned's the famous one, but the others were all...
But can you tell us why he's more famous?
No, I don't really know.
He was the leader of the gang.
Yeah, he was the leader.
Hmm. You still think if you had four people with those on, it's pretty impressive that...
It's like the Bonnie and Clyde thing. There was more than just Bonnie and Clyde in that gang.
But they were known.
Yes, they were known. But that was because of those photos and stuff.
And maybe this was because of his letter.
So anyway, so Ned's gone. Well, he's round the back.
He's round the back.
And he's wearing the armour.
He's wearing the armour. Now, despite the armour, Joe was shot in the groin and died.
Oh, that's you, Matt.
But yeah, died a hero's death.
But apparently, and also kind of cool, he was like having a drink at the bar when he was shot. Which is also how it's depicted in the movie.
So he was, shooting out and then went back for a drink?
Went back for a drink. No, so like so Joe, Steve and Dan are all inside the hotel, shooting through windows and doors at the police outside.
They're taking drink breaks.
Ned has left.
In the lulls,
Ned's left
Dave.
The building. In the lulls, you can go get a whiskey. Help yourself, open bar.
Bad boys.
Okay, it's not that bad. So Joe was shot while having a drink at the bar and the other two... they kept shooting from the rear of the building all the way through to the morning. So it started at like 3 a.m. when they flagged down the train. Now it's like 10 a.m. And they sort of hung a white flag out the door, and immediately afterwards about 30 male hostages emerged. So they've let everybody out now, or pretty much everybody. There may still be a few extra people still inside. And as dawn broke, Ned Kelly in his armour approached the police from the rear and began shooting at them with his revolver, despite his wounds. So he'd been shot in the arm and thumb. Otherwise he was okay. Apparently his armour wasn't even dinted. Isn't that weird?
Oh, wow, they just shot his arm and thumb.
Yeah. Well, there's future. I mean, they shoot him again some more.
It's his Achilles.
But at this stage, just an arm and a thumb.
His Achilles heel is his thumb. Take it out.
Get him. He's shooting at them. After about half an hour, he was shot in both unprotected legs, and then a wounded Ned was arrested and charged and taken away. But overall, he was shot in the left foot, left leg, right hand, left arm, and twice in the region of the groin. Ooh.
Oh, but Joe got shot in the groin once and died.
Yeah.
That was his Achilles heel. His Achilles nut.
Oh, no, my groin. Not my groin.
Did you just say nut me groin?
Nut me groin.
Nut me groin.
Oh, were you doing an accent?
That sounds like an old Irishman's name.
Nut me groin.
Nut me Scottish groin.
Man. Pleasure to meet you.
And what about Dan and...
Oh, this is the...
Steve.
So all while this is happening, the siege is still continuing. By the afternoon, the shooting at the hotel had stopped, and the police leader... one of the superintendents decided to set fire to the hotel and received permission from the chief secretary, Robert Ramsey. So at 2:50 p.m, a final volley was fired into the hotel, and under the cover of fire, Senior Constable Charles Johnston placed a bundle of burning straw at the hotel's west side, and as the fire took hold, the police began to close in on the building.
Oh.
So they're like, we'll smoke them out. Now, the bodies of Dan Kelly and Steve Hart were soon discovered. Now, based on their position, they said they must have killed one another, but that's kind of impossible. The exact cause of their death, whether in battle, smoke inhalation, or by suicide, was never determined. This is no good. The body of Joe Byrne was strung up in Benalla as a curiosity. Byrne's friends asked for the body, but it was instead secretly interred at night by police in an unmarked grave at the Benalla Cemetery.
Oh.
They strung him up. Whereas Dan Kelly and Steve Hart were treated a little bit more respectfully. They were taken back to a family member's house, and then they were placed in very expensive coffins. The lid of one was lettered Daniel Kelly, died 28th of June 1880, age 19.
I bet that one was Dan Kelly's.
Very good, it was. And the other said, what do you reckon?
Johnny Be Good.
Stephen Hart.
Oh.
There we go. Yeah, no, weird. Died 28th of June 1880, age 21. They were 19 and 21 years old.
Wow, so young.
So young. And they were buried as well in unmarked graves, which is real nice. But Kelly, Ned survived. He survived to stand trial, and he did that on the 19th of October in 1880. And the trial was adjourned on the 28th. He was presented on charges of the murder of Sergeant Kennedy, Constable Scanlon and Lonergan, and various bank robberies, the murder of Sherritt, resisting arrest at Glenrowan, and with a long list of minor charges as well. And he was convicted of the willful murder of Constable Lonergan and was sentenced to death by hanging by Justice Redmond Barry. Great name.
Red Barry.
There was a Barry earlier.
There's not that many of them.
Yeah, not many families.
Lots of names doubling up anyway. Very confusing.
Barry. Great Aussie name.
Better.
Barry.
So do they have a long time on death row back then, or do they take you out the back straight away and hang you?
A couple of weeks. And I think maybe that was because it was quite a high-profile case as well. So the police probably wanted to be like, see, we bloody got him.
Yeah. Do you know what his last meal was?
I don't.
Peas.
You're
his favourite.
A fucking idiot.
His favourite. Love the peas.
You're an embarrassment.
Green for life. That was his last words, was it? No.
Green for life were his last words. Now, Ned's final defiant stand against the Felons Apprehension Act and his pleas for justice to end discrimination against poor Irish settlers did end up opening the eyes of a lot of people. So even towards the very end of his life, he was kind of fighting for that. So Ned Kelly in his armour came to symbolise a fight by a flawed hero. A convicted criminal for justice and liberty and innocent people. And this captured the imagination of writers, authors and the general public. So obviously there's been a lot of art, a lot of stories about him.
Supposedly, is it seen to be, I think, the first ever feature film was about Ned Kelly?
Yeah, that's right.
It was an Australian film in, like, early
1900s? 1906, I believe. It was 06 or 07. Yeah, it was one of the first...
07 rings a bell to me.
Yeah, 07 maybe. First feature film.
Yeah, crazy.
Full-length feature film, yeah.
They've lost a lot of it, but they were able to recover some of it, so it's still... I think it's archived at the... some sort of government...
It's pretty amazing.
...thing.
And it was about Ned Kelly.
Yeah.
And
Mick Jagger played him in that.
In the 1970 version.
Oh, 1970.
Yeah, not 1907. That was not Mick Jagger.
Let's mix those numbers up.
So, as I mentioned before, he was hanged on the 11th of November 1880 at the Melbourne Jail, now known as the Old Melbourne Jail.
At the time, it wasn't old.
It wasn't old. It was just the Melbourne Jail.
The new, brand new, spanking brand new.
Spanking. So the Argus reported that the governor of the jail informed Ned that the hour of execution had been fixed at 10 o'clock, and Kelly, apparently, this is when he simply replied, "Such is life." Those were not his final words.
Right.
It's widely debated. It's debated. Some people do say it was his final words. Some argue, like, no, those are some very poetic final words. Who's ever going to have such great final words?
His last words.
Well, he's had 2 weeks to think about it.
Mm.
But his last words were, "Ouchies."
Ow!
Ow, this really hurts.
Guys, this is too tight.
Honestly, I'm struggling to breathe with this thing.
It's not funny anymore.
Oh, there goes my neck. Great. Snap. Ugh. Dead now.
Yeah. Wow, Matt, that was a really moving portrayal of those final moments.
Thank you very much.
Wow.
Emotional.
If I may actually talk about his final moments, have a little
bit
of respect for the dead, if
you wouldn't
mind. Apparently he was... Because it's funny because there were reports all the way along that he would fight everybody. Like, if he was ever arrested, he would never go without a fight. He would, like, he got into so many brawls. But on this day, he was quite submissive. Apparently, when passing the jail's flower bed, he remarked, "What a nice little garden." He's quite at peace.
Wow, really?
Yeah, apparently. But said nothing further until he reached the press room, where he remained until the arrival of the chaplain. And then the Argus reported that Ned was asked, he intended to make a speech, but merely said, "Ah, well, I suppose it's come to this," as the rope was being placed around his neck. "I suppose it's come to this." Such as life is probably a bit better, isn't it?
Yeah. Same sort of idea. Had he forgotten his speech? Is that what?
I don't know if he'd forgotten or it was just like, what the fuck's the point?
I've left my notes in the cell.
Something about green being my favourite colour.
It's come to this. It's fucking come to this.
I knew I'd forget. So, although the exact number is unknown, it's alleged that a petition for a commutation of sentence attracted over 30,000 signatures.
Wow.
So even, like, he's become a legend.
It's a bloody folk
now.
Hero.
He's a folk hero now, but even at the time there was a lot of support for him.
And apparently it was seen to be really dangerous. Like, the authorities didn't like it because it really...
What, supporting him?
Yeah, they were worried that he was going to be seen as a...
As a hero.
As a hero, yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that's kind of interesting, and they definitely played it up in the film as well, is that when Ned was 11, he saved another boy from drowning.
Yeah.
And got, he was presented with this green, oh my God, a green sash. I've only just realised it was green.
Of course it was.
Of course it was green.
It was a green sash for bravery, and it was presented to him by, like, you know, important people in the town. He was really proud of that, like, even up until... And apparently he was wearing that under his armour. He was wearing his green sash for bravery under his armour when he was...
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And that sash, I think, is still covered in blood, and it's on display somewhere as well. But, yeah, that gentleman is my report on Ned Kelly.
On Ned Kelly. So what do we all think of him?
Well, that's the thing. Where do we stand?
Is he a criminal, or is he a hero, or a bit of both?
I've been thinking about it, and I think... You know, there's a conspiracy because...
Here we go.
Well, jet fuel doesn't melt body armour.
Open your eyes, people.
Sheeple. Slaves. A lot of you.
You're all fucking slaves to the Ned Kelly myth.
What do you reckon?
Oh, it's very hard to say, isn't
it? I like him. I'm on his side. I don't think he made the best choices because you can't deny that he killed people and... made some bad decisions, but...
It's tricky when if you're in a crazy time like that, when it just feels like they were kind of wild days anyway, they're putting you back against the wall. Live a shit life is one option, or fight is the other.
And he was lovely to all the people he took hostage.
Are you
going to commute his sentence?
Just make a decision.
I'm going to be ambivalent.
Why? What does it achieve? What is saying one thing or another actually matter? It's just a nice little conclusion. You're just ruining the fucking podcast by not making a decision.
I'm glad he was
behaving
around.
Like a bloody accountant, mate.
I'm glad.
How dare you?
Yeah, that's offensive. I'm glad he was around so we could have a great story about him 160 years after his birth.
Oh.
I think it's actually 162 years, Dave, but...
Well, apparently that's debatable.
That is debatable.
You bloody got ya.
Jess Perkins. Yeah, no, I think if anyone did this kind of had this behaviour now, when I have more respect for the police and the justice system. But at the time, it sounds like it's very, very dodgy and that they picked on him a lot. So
it's weird. It's very weird. And he's been really glorified. So, you know.
One thing I'd like to say is I think that guy that ran away on the horse was not...
Not a coward.
Not a coward.
Okay. I'm happy to go on the record with that
I'm going on the record and saying that I thought that...
McIntyre.
Before I heard that other people thought he was a coward, I thought, well, that's brave. Jumped on a horse and got out of there.
Yeah.
McIntyre. Quick thinking. Him. Saved his life. Anyway, I'm sorry that was hastily put together.
Stop bringing attention to it. I don't think it seemed like that at all.
Nailed it.
I think that was a bloody good time.
Yeah.
Soft clap. Build it up. At the back, just the ladies and the gents. Let me hear you. A couple of whoops. Whoop, whoop. That is a podcast report. Thank you, Jess. We're going to be back next week with me doing a report. But in the meantime, if you want to suggest what I can talk about, you can contact us. Do go on pod at gmail.com or at do go on pod on Twitter. The hat that we keep going with ideas is filling up.
To the brim.
To the brim.
It's a part of a hat.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
We're going to get a bigger hat. We're going to get a bigger hat for all your suggestions. Obviously, if you have the time, want to give us a little rating on iTunes, that always...
that'd be so
we
sweet.
We won't say no.
Perks up Jess Perkins.
Yeah, she needs Perkin.
Needs Perkin, so to speak. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back on the new report next week. And until then, don't rob any banks. Thank you, and goodbye.
Bye. Or rob a bank, that's fine.
Yeah, whatever. Do it.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.